Great, thank you. All right, so this is week three of our four-week study on Hebrews, and just a brief recap of what we talked about in the last 2 weeks. So week one, we had this idea that Jesus is better. Better than what the Jews had in the old system before in terms of coming to God through a high priest, coming to God through the temple, interacting with God through the angels, and what they had in just the law. So for us today, I think some of the things that we could take from that from week one were that, you know, Jesus is better than maybe some of our rituals that we tend to pour ourselves into a lot of times and can often lose sight of the fact that those are meant to lead us to the Lord. They're not necessarily an end-all be-all in and of themselves, or even some of the people that we hold dear. I'm looking at my spouse because I know that for me that can be one of the things that I know I really cling to a lot, is that I have a godly spouse, but not to use that as a substitute, right, for having that deeper relationship of my own. So just remembering that Jesus is better than all of those other things that should, in fact, lead us to him. And week two, we looked at faith in terms of what is faith, what does it look like for faith to spur action in us, and just kind of acknowledging that, again, we aren't saved by what we do, not by our rituals, but that, in fact, when we have a deeper faith, that in turn drives action and produces works in us. So here we are in week three, and I've got perseverance. So this is a really, I think, personal one for me for reasons I'll get into here in just a few minutes. But I want to take some time today and just share some things about what perseverance looks like and kind of our family's life and some of the things that we're going through in terms of our family's journey and raising our children. So the first thing I wanted to do is take a look at these couple of scriptures in Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. So this is great for me because I really love sports analogies. So it's awesome that it turns out not only is it a cool thing, it's biblical. So here we're presented with this analogy of running a race. So first of all, I don't know how many athletes and everything we have in the room, but think of a time when you might have been involved in some sort of competition, athletic or other, and like what caused you to finish, or maybe what caused you to drop out? Any runners?
For me, I set a goal, so I wanted to finish the goal that was in front of me.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
I knew there were other people watching me, and so I wanted to finish. I was running a half marathon, so I wanted to finish so I would not be embarrassed. I didn't want to quit, you know. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, yeah, for others to be proud of me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I did cross country in high school. I am not a runner. I have like athletic induced asthma. But this year, all of my friends, we were going to play all of the sports, and cross country was one of them. And we had to run around Lena Pope home, and Central Market was not there. That was a big open field. And the goal was to make it around three times, and then we were done. Well, by the time I got around one time, they were signaling for people to finish. So I was like, okay, well, I'm done. And they gave out prizes, but I didn't get a medal. It was just like, you finished number 25. Well, the number one girl from our school finished like number 27, and she was so upset because me and my friend technically did not finish. But I tried to explain to her, like, I can't breathe, I'm finished, you can have my place if you want it, but yeah, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. So maybe I think something that I could kind of take from that is maybe back to the topic that when we're talking about it, maybe just the fact that you finish, right? Even if you're gasping for air along the way, and even if you're stumbling and falling, the fact that you finished the race, right, was equally as important. No? Oh. She cheated. So back to like what my mom mentioned was that your eye was fixed on a goal, right? You were looking toward the end. And so I wanted to just ask, what does it mean to you? I think it's a really easy thing to say, oh, we're supposed to run the race and fix our eyes on Jesus. What exactly does that mean, like, to you when you hear the term fixing my eyes on Jesus? I mean, are you literally getting, like, a specific image in your mind, a picture of Jesus that we're focusing on? Or probably not that simplistic. So what does it really mean to run a race fixing your eyes on Jesus? What does it mean to you?
Because I'm a visual person, for me, it goes back to the plays, the movies I've seen all over my life about Jesus' crucifixion. And I always, when I do that, I always think about, I don't know how people that just go through the Word and don't have to have a visualization stay focused, because I'm such a visual person. And I'm a learner that sees, says, does, you know, the whole bit. And so, for me, it goes back to his crucifixion and having seen that. Mm-hmm. And so that's justifiable enough for me to keep going.
Mm-hmm. I saw a hand there.
Well, just the thought of spending eternity with Jesus, who loves me, that is a goal that I strive for.
I didn't really think of this until you asked the question, and it's not what I typically think of when I read a verse, but maybe like seeing everything in terms of Jesus, like, it's a little cheesy, but you know, the like desert island, you're on desert island and like people's heads are turning into food, that sort of thing. But it's like, looking at everything in your path in terms of how it relates to your goal. And even if there's an obstacle, where is Christ in the obstacle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to think of that for me, and I will come back to this in a few minutes, but we talk a lot in our house about maintaining kind of that eternal perspective. And that can be a comfort, right, in places where we're in a valley, where fixing our eyes on Jesus might mean the reason I can keep coming back to this situation and climbing back into the ring is because I'm not going to get bogged down in kind of what's in front of me in terms of my physical reality right now, but I'm going to choose to maintain a lens for what does it all really mean in terms of, you know, me and my children and our community, for trying to just get to heaven, to a time where everything is restored and there isn't any sickness and injury and all that type of thing. So kind of coming back to that day after day for me, it is trying to maintain that eternal perspective in spite of whatever it is that you have in front of you. Again, I'll come back to that in a bit. So the next piece that I wanted to spend a little time on is Hebrews 12 verses 4 through 11. I'll read that for us really quickly. This is about God disciplining his children. So in your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And have you completely forgotten this word of encouragement that addresses you as a father addresses his son? It says, "My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines the ones he loves, and he chastens everyone he accepts as his son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children, for what children are not disciplined by their father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it." So I'll tell you, in terms of kind of the lens that I approach all this through, that to me is a kind of one to wrestle with a little bit. So maybe we can spend a few minutes and do that together. But how is discipline from God evidence that we are his beloved children? Yeah, that's a tough one. And while you're thinking on that, And this idea of hardship is discipline. So is all hardship discipline? And, you know, is it even worth asking the question? Like, how do we discern what hardship in our life is discipline and what isn't? And does it matter?
Some of the more minor hardships in life are probably just bad luck, you know, a flat tire or you trip over something and fall on your face or something like that. But then there are the deeper things that you have to maybe learn to discipline yourself to walk through that I think God works through to help us become more disciplined. And so you can look at that and say, well, you know, I'm having a really hard time, poor little me. Or you can say, hey, this is tough and I'm walking through it, but I'm learning to lean on God to get through it and therefore I'm growing.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to get to the other side of it too before you realize what you've done, you know, the discipline you went through or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think to your first question, that being disciplined, it gives us an opportunity to share in His holiness.
Yeah.
And I think that's something really special.
Yeah.
Well, what's the difference between discipline and punishment? Because that's what I feel.
Yeah, it's, I think, I was thinking along the same lines. Like, it's hard for me to believe that a God who's loving would say, okay, I'm going to visit on you this illness, I'm going to visit on you this hardship. And I think it's more, in His love, He creates a world that has the capability for good and bad and knows that all of His people are going to experience some of that bad and provides an avenue for that bad to be redeemed. And so I don't think it's punishing them, I'm going to discipline them by giving you something, but it's like, you know, setting up circumstances for your kids where they are able to fail so that you can provide them the opportunity to grow. And they might hurt during that, but it's not.
But there are times in the Bible where God punishes.
There are.
So those
are
hard. That's hard.
Those are hard for me to figure out.
Yes, it is. It's so hard because, you know, God put natural consequences for some of our actions. And so, you know, people that are non-believers also experience consequences. So how do you discern what is discipline because we are His children? That's really tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it, I think it's that fatherly relationship that maybe helps me the most to understand some of that, because the intentionality behind it is a selfless one. It's one for your good and for you to grow. You know, there is the idea of discipline. The difference between discipline and punishment is really critical to dig into, I think, because, you know, there's also an idea of discipline as being more of a teaching kind of thing, like Jesus' disciples. And so, you know, there's like it's just a different perspective to take on these issues, is that how are some of these things meant as teaching and training, or maybe not meant, but used.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, and I don't think there's a straight answer to some of those things. I think that a lot of it, Emily, like you said, we get on the other side and we can see it better, and some of it we may not see this side of heaven, as they say.
I mean, sometimes it's clear, like Jonah, he was like, this me being
And there are good times in my life where I felt that too, like, you know, like God made this, okay, I did this to myself. I stayed up too late last night, and now I'm suffering. Yep. That's a really bad example.
Did you have something?
I was just going to say that I don't think there's really a way to define it as punishment or discipline. I think it comes from our faith and how we choose to look at it and let God roll through it, because Satan is alive and God does not control him. And he's at the root of a lot of our pain and suffering and, you know, things that we go through. But if we lean into God and say, okay, this is more than I can handle, so you're in charge now, please help me through this, show me what I need to learn through this, then He's there for all of us, and it comes from our faith in Him, and letting Him work through whatever situation, because we have all these situations. We think, why did this happen to me, and what was me, but if we could just trust Him, because and not think, well, when this is all over, then I'll be the best person. It's like, no, walking through every day is that opportunity to learn His love and to learn more through our lives.
And I kind of like, to your point, I mean, Emily and Becca, punishment versus discipline, like I'm about to get into, you know, again, some of the specifics of the things that are part of our journey and maybe some of the mental struggles that I've gone through in terms of trying to think through a lot of this in the everyday muck of it all. But sometimes it does kind of feel like, not so much the punishment part of it, but a really rigorous daily exercise, like some of the military videos that I watch, and I'm like, okay, is this my form of, like, this is my daily discipline, and is this sort of the refiner's fire for us? And kind of looking forward to, maybe to Emily's point, looking back, you know, where are the areas maybe where we've been brought through, or maybe where we started at this point, maybe even our faith journey, where will we be able to see that He has taken us through climbing back into the ring day after day? So on that note, I wanted to share just a little bit. And again, I would think that probably just because of who's in the audience, I think probably most of you are familiar with our journey. I may share more specifics here that we may not necessarily talk about all the time. And the first thing I would ask is, I am sharing some things a little bit more personally and more specifically than even a lot of times we talk about them to the larger groups. So, you know, maybe just some of the specifics I share, maybe you could keep confidential just among yourselves. So both of our children are autistic, and one of the significant things about me asking you to keep some of that to yourselves is that our older son, like, we've never actually said to him, you're autistic. He doesn't, I mean, I think that he probably feels like a lot of the supports that we've put around him his whole life, he may not realize that not every kid has all that. You know, it's just he's so high functioning in so many ways. We didn't really even feel like that was necessary, because so what, you know? And in terms of telling that story to other people, you know, we're not real splashy about it on Facebook and everything. Where Nathan is concerned, we feel like that's kind of his story to share later. So anyway, just FYI. But we have two children, and you know, from the time that Nathan was a toddler, like, I just knew that there were some things that were different. And those of my peers who have been with us through the whole journey of when we first came to Southside, was I pregnant at the time that we first came to Southside? I think I was. So, you know, he didn't play with other kids the way kids play. And he was so literal that it just didn't seem like he had a creative streak at all, and it was very difficult when we would go to try to participate in, like, small groups, because he wouldn't play with the other kids, and I was not able to actually go and do what the adults were doing and do the point of small grouping, which was really to kind of engage and do that Bible study and be part of the adult discussion, because I just felt like I needed to stay with him constantly so that he wouldn't put his toys in Becca's oven or find a screwdriver and take somebody's cabinets apart and all that kind of stuff. And when I couldn't find him in the church building, I would pause in the fellowship hall and I would just watch to see where the lights were going on and off, because he had that obsession with light switches. So we just knew from a young age that some things were different. And one of the things, and so flash forward, again, he's incredibly intelligent, and a lot of the things that are good about my children, I'm gonna just need, for the sake of time, I need those to be assumed. I need the fact that I love my children, that I'm glad to be a mommy, that they are brilliant and wonderful and beautiful and gifts. We're gonna let all that be assumed for today, okay? I'm just gonna put that right over here. We all know it's true. So this is perseverance. I'm gonna talk to you about the crappy parts of it today, okay? So, flash forward, there's so many ways that he's excelling, but there's so many areas in the day-to-day that are a grind. We are getting ready to bring in some other therapists right now, because he really struggles with emotional regulation, and I am left bleeding and bruised, and I have patches of my hair that are pulled out. And that's hard every day to be in that place. You know, he has, I think I totaled up 9 foods that he eats, and one of those is milk, and that's it. And that's been true since he was a baby. Is that a little bit shocking to the mommies in the room? 9. And so most things he's never eaten. He has never tried most foods on the planet, even like Cheetos and things like that, if you can even get your mind around that. So that's Nathan. And then with Ryan, you know, is already kind of resetting my entire thought process around what mommying was going to be like and what the whole journey was going to be like. And I remember a time sitting in a nursery. It was when it was dawning on me that little Ryan wasn't talking, that he was just babbling. And I think we'd been so focused on Nathan, it was one of those things where we were just kind of letting Ryan do his thing. And I just had that moment where I was like, he's flapping, he's spinning, he's severely speech delayed. I think my youngest one's autistic too. And I remember sitting in a nursery with a few of you guys, and I mean, I just was sobbing, heaving like I have never sobbed before. And so that led to the whole, but basically taking my second child into being like, this child is autistic. I need a diagnosis yesterday so that I can start him in therapy. So let's do this thing. And so he is considered nonverbal, which is a term that I hate. And that is a very difficult place to be as a mother, because again, I'll ask the mommies in the room to think about what it would be like if basically, that's how it feels. If you have a child and you're told you can raise that child, but there's always going to be like this, maybe, you don't really know what it's always going to be, but for now there's going to be like this glass pane in between you and the child. You can touch them and you can interact to a degree, but you might not hear mommy until they are five. Or you won't be able to ask them how their day was, or if somebody hurt them, or if their tummy hurts. Or if they're doing this, is it too loud in here? Do you have an ear infection? Does something hurt? So the desperation, I think, of having that level of separation, and it's not one that you can, it's not tangible, it's not something you can see, but you certainly feel it every day, is very, very hard. And not being able to ask him what he wants for Christmas. Like, that's a tough one for me. And the worst part of the autism journey for me, I think, is not being really able to understand why. Because unlike some other medical diagnoses, there's not necessarily a pinpointed reason. And when you don't have an answer like that, you will try to make one up in your mind. And you will exhaust yourself trying to create some level of understanding for those of us who really need a reason. So I've asked myself, did I do something wrong in my pregnancy? It was the Dr. Peppers I drank with Ryan, I know it was. You know, is there something wrong with our genes? Lindsay plus Johnny equals autistic babies. I don't understand that. I don't even really think there's a good test we could take to determine that, and we're done anyway, so it is what it is. You know, I remember one time I was visiting with my sister-in-law and her husband. I was sitting down, thank goodness I wasn't standing, and Ryan was sitting on my lap, and I had my arms around him, but I was also taking a picture with somebody else with my phone. I was like, say cheese, and he flipped out of my arms and landed on their wooden floor, face down, bloody nose and everything, and I can't tell you how many times I've replayed that scene. I'm like, that's why. That's why he is like this. It's because I dropped him. So that's what you do in your mind. The journey tends to bring a lot of isolation. It isolates our children from their neurotypical peers. It isolates us from our peers in terms of relatability. And even in various social settings, we just don't necessarily always feel like we can navigate that, right? Melanie Horn tried to go to the Super Bowl party a couple of years ago, and wow. But this last year, it was better, wasn't it? It was better. So again, in those moments, you're just trying to think why, and going back to what we were talking about, I will admit that I have asked myself, is it something I did? Did I sin? What did I do? And I've been making a list in my mind, craziness in high school, craziness in college, whatever. This is why. Like God said, you can have these children, but you're gonna have some pain. And we've talked about that at home. Like, do we really think that that's the God that we serve? I mean, I don't think I really believe that, but yet we know there's hardship that's discipline, so I don't know. And by the way, we don't have a lot of concrete answers in this discussion. We're just talking, because this is what we do with scripture, right? We just kind of wrestle with it. So has anybody else ever had that thought creep in? I'm sure it's Satan. But have you had that thought creep in when you're in the valley? Is this because of something that I did? Or is this because I sinned? I actually take some comfort in the story. We won't spend a lot of time here, but it was just something I thought about when I was preparing this about the man born blind. There's just one beautiful sentence in there that I've really clinged to. When the disciples and Jesus are walking along and they come upon this man that was born blind, and what did the disciples ask Jesus about that situation? What did they ask him? Who sinned? Yeah, who sinned, this man or his parents? Somebody must have sinned, that's why this is happening to him. And we're going to talk later, next week when we're talking about community, we're going to come back to the whole milk and meat thing. But that always seems to me, it's really easy, I think, to roll our eyes at that question and be like, what a milk question. That's such a milk question. Those disciples, they just don't get it yet. But I will admit, like, I've certainly thought that too. But what does Jesus say in response? And I love this. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. Sorry. So I would say that that is a really wonderful and beautiful thought. And back to the whole persevering thing, I think, I've thought a lot of times that if my journey and my keep showing up for it, if the works of God can be displayed through my children and through our journey, that maybe that's okay and maybe that's enough. But I will tell you, and in my conversations with Becca and preparing for this class, that's easy to say and it's easy to think and cling to, but that doesn't mean that every day isn't hard. And it's a choice. Back to that eternal perspective, you have to choose to think like that every day, sometimes hourly. And so I just wanted to kind of take a minute and say in that perseverance journey, I think sometimes we just need to acknowledge that that's okay to kind of be in that place. It's not a bad place to be in. It helps us, I think, to cling to, thank you, to cling to God's mercy in those situations, but it's a hard thing to wrestle with, just to maintain that kind of perspective. And as if that wasn't emotional enough, I want to share a really quick movie clip. This was a favorite of mine for a long time until I had children, and then I couldn't watch it for a long time because it hit way too close to home. But there's a point here where I will just pause because it just is a good illustration of kind of what I'm talking about. Oh, context. Mr. Holland's Opus. So this is obviously a brief clip, so if you haven't seen it, what's going on here is you have a man who is a music teacher in a school. He does a lot of composition, but they have one child named Cole, and they figure out really early on that Cole is deaf. And at least where we are in the film, and it does get better, but where we are at this point in the film, mom is desperate to communicate with her little guy. And also, for extra fun, they are not on the same page. Mom and dad are really not on the same page about the best approach for this child. So.
Way ahead of any other school in the state.
It's probably the most expensive place in the state.
Yeah, but if it's the best.
I'm just.
People worry about where the money's coming from. That's a lot. It's probably a great place, Iris, but I worry about the money, okay?
Show me what you want. You deserve this?
Sorensen said that gestures meant...
It's way more than gestures.
That gestures meant that Cole would never learn how to lip read or to talk.
He can barely talk now. He can't say two or three words.
The guy is a specialist, Iris.
He's a specialist who thinks that deaf people are retarded, and he is not retarded. He's Cole.
What does he give him what he wants?
I don't know what he wants. I don't understand what he's trying to tell me. Don't you get it? You go up to school every day with all your children who are normal. I can't talk to my son. What he wants and what he thinks and what he feels. I can't tell him that I love him. I can't tell him who I am. I want to talk to my son. I don't care what it costs. I don't care what stupid doctor says, straight or wrong. I want to talk to my son.
So that place right there is kind of what I'm pointing to this morning. Because for all the loveliness of talking about maintaining that eternal perspective, when you're there, and I feel like a lot of times I live there, it can be a challenge to maintain that perspective. And like I said, it's kind of it can be a daily choice. What gives me hope and the will to keep putting one foot in front of the other is that I really do believe that we serve a God who meets us in that place. I think acknowledging that it's okay to struggle and maintain that perspective, because I really do believe that one day all things are going to be restored, and that there won't be any sadness, and that it won't matter the degree to which I can communicate with my child, because I believe that there's a time coming where we're just going to be two spirits praising Jesus. And that is, I think that is what helps me to keep going through each day. So a couple of things, and actually Lauren alluded to it earlier when she was saying one of the things that helped her finish that race was knowing that other people were watching. I'm glad you said that, because that is a beautiful segue. So it's interesting to think about a few things. Does hardship come, maybe in part, so that the works of God might be displayed through how he's working through our suffering? And is our act of perseverance and our unwillingness to give up, to curse God and die, our choice to not reject our faith, is that an opportunity for God to demonstrate his faithfulness, not just to us, but to kind of the spectators? I mean, have you seen that kind of in your own life, or does anybody come to mind that you've thought of where you've seen that in the lives of others?
Many of us in the fellowship class, we remember a couple years ago, my best friend from my childhood growing up, best friend's youngest son was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and he was 2 mm-hmm. at the time, and he passed away within 6 months after the diagnosis, and that was really hard. But Erin and her husband, Jack, still, they have built a whole ministry on that experience, and they have brought real people to the Lord. There's a family that they've kind of adopted, a single mom with her 3 kids who went through similar experience, and who are thriving and living a beautiful life following Christ. And that's just one of the stories that have come out of that. And as a witness, I mean, I feel like that's, I have just sat, you know, behind my computer screen and watched on Facebook how that has happened, and I don't know how they've had the strength to mm-hmm.
to persevere, but at the same time, to boldly proclaim Christ every second. But it has been powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really powerful. Isn't it?
Anybody else have anything they want to share on that? Just when you've seen this as a either an opportunity to witness, or maybe that has how it has impacted you in watching others.
I think of Emily and Russ again,
yeah.
And the loss of her baby. And if you've ever read anything that she's written, I mean, starting with the letter that was read at Tate's funeral, I was just overcome by, I mean, the things that they said in that letter. I even asked Bea for a copy of the letter. It's in my email, and I read it sometimes because it's so inspirational, and it's so, their faith just was astounding, you know, through that. And still, after all this time, when she writes about that experience, it is very heartfelt, and she's a great writer and a great witness.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Mm-hmm. And I really believe that there is an opportunity there. And I keep coming back to the whole, so that the works of God might be displayed. That is an encouraging thought and an energizing thought. If our purpose here, if I'm asking, okay, if my purpose here is to teach my children to love the Lord, but then also that we could be a witness to other people, then okay, like I'll take that. Like that, for me, that's a reason to keep getting back in there and pursuing this thing that we have been given. Doesn't mean it's easy, but I mean, it's a cool challenge to think about. If we can, if even one person can maybe be encouraged by, you know, watching us navigate through that, then okay.
I'd like to say to you that I am definitely encouraged by watching you and John navigate through this. And the things that you share on Facebook and the things that you're doing for your boys to give them every opportunity, it is inspiring, and we appreciate that witness and appreciate your faithfulness.
Thank you. So that's really all I have today. I wanted to just kind of, it's a nice segue into our fourth week. Next week is our last week of this class, and we're going to be talking about community. And that's a big piece for how we all, I think, continue to keep showing up and to persevere, is how we are able to lean on each other. I'm looking forward to talking about that next week, because I know when I'm angry or I'm afraid, I'm exhausted, or when I'm grieving, and that is definitely where my community of support from our church family has been critical. So we'll discuss more about how we run the race as community next week. That's it.
Thank you.
Ding!